This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Thursday, March 12th edition of TalkBack. TalkBack this morning is brought to you by our friends at Y West Storage. Secure flexible self-storage in Missoula. Call Y West at 510-0590. Of course, these are all 406 numbers, as you know, to reserve your unit today at Y West. Quality Seamless Gutters, expert gutter installation and repair. For a free quote, call Quality Seamless Gutters at 728-4002. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales with parts and service included. Call 406-541-9097 for Bruckner's. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. The number for a free estimate is 550-3219. Pivots Plus, Montana's leader in irrigation parts, service, and sales. Call Pivots Plus, 683-4418. Gomer's Diesel Incorporated, diesel repair, parts, and service in Missoula. The number to call, 728-7620 for Gomer's. And by Harrington Surgical Supply, where they provide medical and surgical supplies to healthcare professionals all across western Montana. Call Harrington, 721-8468.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Peter Christian here, the fabulous Nick Christensen over there. Good morning, Mr. Nick.
Good morning.
And speaking of fabulous, joining us here in studio this morning, it is amazing, almost electric green Irish sweater. It is Trelach O'Riordan, head of the Irish Studies Program at the University of Montana. Welcome, sir. I'm glad that you came on this blustery day.
Good to meet you, Mahagot the Father. Thank you so much, Peter. Good to see you and to see Nick, and great to be here again. Of course, I'm here. It's almost like the annual pilgrimage here every every March. We come in and talk about St. Patrick and all that great stuff, you know. So it's great to be here. Good to see you both looking so well.
Well, I want you to know that instead of you bringing an offering to us, we have an offering for you. When you leave this morning, when you're done with the interview, go into the kitchen. My wife made her world-famous monster cookies, and they're in there, and hopefully they'll still be there by the time
Especially for me?
Yeah. You can take a couple home if you want.
I'll do that. Thank you so much.
They're about as big as your head. So.
Good.
All right, so first of all, let's talk about what's going on with the Irish Studies program, sir.
Well, there was a decision made to cancel the Irish Studies program or put a moratorium on it. In other words, the minor in Irish Studies would not be offered for a period of time. And this decision was made at the university. The reason given was low enrollment in the minor itself. In other words, students that were actually registering to receive the degree or the minor. Now, the thing about it is the courses that make up the minor are very, very popular up there. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, what happens with the minor and why a lot of students didn't actually register for the minor is that they were unaware that they could do so. And to a certain extent, that would be my fault because the emphasis was on enrollment. Right. So we were focusing on enrollment, and enrollment is very, very good. So that decision was made, and we're challenging that decision. But I think the key element of it is that what will happen here is that the Irish language program will be cancelled. And that is the main issue, because once the Irish language program is cancelled, that means that the third highest enrolled language program in campus is going to be cancelled. But it's more than that. It's actually the reason we have the Irish language program and we have an Irish studies program that has that element goes back to the history of the state. The Irish that came out here
were
primarily Irish speakers. And unlike other places, you know, they formed their own community in communities in Butte and Anaconda. Now, this happened around the time when there was a revival going on to basically preserve these Irish Gaelic elements of the culture. So we're talking about the music and the dance and the language. And in Ireland, there was an organization put together called the Gaelic League to do that. And it became popular, but it had no money. And it came out to America. And the man that came out was Douglas Hyde. He became the first president of the independent Irish Republic. But he came to America in 1906 and He went from Boston, New York, Philly, Chicago, all the great Irish areas, and out here to Montana. Now, it was in Montana he received the greatest contribution.
Wow.
And Montana became known for his commitment to the Irish Gaelic revival. So when this organization received the money and it grew, it actually ended up employing 15 full-time organizers and over 250 traveling teachers who taught the language, the music, and the dance, same as we do. But the thing about it, of those 15, 14 of them were paid from the Treasury in Dublin. One was paid completely by contributions from Montana.
Wow.
Now, this was known in Ireland. So when the Irish Studies Programme was established, it was established basically through a collaboration between the Irish government, the Montana Gaelic Irish. So it was committed to this Gaelic Culture Society, which was a community organisation, and the university. The focus would be this Gaelic culture, which made Montana so unique. And when the president actually opened it, President Mary McAleese in 2006 launched the program, she made specific reference to that contribution that had been made by the Irish of Montana to the revival of the Gaelic culture. And she announced as well a grant of $30,000 to support that program, a grant that they have renewed every year since.
Wow.
So the Irish government has contributed over $775,000 to promotion of the Irish language, and the Irish language has now been cut. Now, you can imagine how that's been taken back in Ireland.
I'm sure.
A slap in the face.
We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. By the way, all the phone lines are open. If you have a question for Trey Lach or Reardon, give us a call, 721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. It is definitely the season. St. Patrick's Day is quite literally right around the corner, and we'll find out what the plans are in Missoula as well. Hopefully this weather will be long gone by then, but you've done it in the rain before, so what the heck?
Irish weather, Peter, we're used to it.
We're going
to
come right back after this quick timeout.
Most builders.
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather, rain and snow, along with high winds Thursday into Saturday for areas west of the divide. And now a better chance we could see some accumulating snow in the higher valleys, a few inches possible in areas like the Flint and Blackfoot valleys, and even Missoula and the Bitterroot could see a couple of inches. The mountains will be crazy with 2 to as much as 4 feet over the northern divide and blizzard warnings posted. Expect persistent snow and rough travel conditions over those passes, especially along the Idaho border.
We are back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. Talking with Trey Lach O'Riordan, head of the University of Montana Irish Studies Program, which is coming to an end.
Well, it is. I mean, there'll be an Irish Studies program there, but it would be kind of generic. In other words, it'd be similar to an Irish Studies program in other universities. There won't be a minor. You won't be able to get a degree in Irish Studies, but there'll be Irish Studies courses offered. But the thing about it is the unique program that we had, which is only one of only three in the whole country, that will be gone. You know, and that program focused on the Gaelic culture of the Irish who came out here. It was their language, it was their culture, and it was something they were committed to. And this passed down through the generations. So back in the 1990s, descendants of these original immigrants put together an organization that they didn't call the Montana Irish Cultural Society. They called it Montana Gaelic Cultural Society. So its focus was on the language, the music, and the dance. And this group received such support that they were able to, first of all, speak with the Irish consulate in San Francisco, then the university, about creating a program that focused on that distinct and unique culture here in Montana. And that was the basis of the Irish Studies program we have. Now, once you get rid of the Irish language, you're going to get rid of the Gaelic culture, because the Irish language, not only are we teaching the language, we're also teaching the literature.
Right.
You know, which is in the Irish language, and that goes back to the 6th century. So we teach courses that deal with early Irish literature, the old mythological tales and so forth. They'll be gone. Also, you'll have the history courses, which focus on basically telling the story of the Irish experience, not just in Ireland, but also here, from the records left by the Irish themselves. So it's a bit like the Native Americans telling their own history using their own resources. That'll be gone, you know? So there'll be a lot of things that will happen, that'll be gone as a consequence of this decision. And the thing about it is these courses are very popular, so it's obvious that students want to take these courses and they enjoy these courses.
What are the students doing? I mean, obviously they're the ones that are, they and their parents are paying for these programs, and doesn't their participation and enthusiasm about the project about the studies, doesn't that make a difference?
Well, you'd hope so, and they are. They're protesting and they're writing in, and there's different people like from the community and others that have been writing in and protesting the decision, you know, and hoping that it will be reversed. And that's my hope as well, that it will be, you know, that we are dealing with a university that's in Montana, supported by the taxpayers of Montana, and what they want should be factored into the decisions that are made. And if you have a university that's uniquely and distinctly Montanan, you just can't uplift it and move it somewhere else and it'll make no difference, you know. It has to basically reflect or embrace the culture in which it's located, you know. So I'm hoping that the decision will be reversed. Now, I don't kind of in any sense believe that the decision that was made out of any sense of malice or anything. I do think those that made the decision have...
Is it purely monetary?
It's difficult to figure out, actually, because the enrollment is good. And then a lot of the funding, most of the funding to support the program came from outside the university. So that's the question I can't answer. I don't know. And I know the Friends of Irish Studies have written to the provost about it, and they're writing again to her, you know, to get more clarity on the basis of this decision. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, the University of Montana is well known as a liberal arts university. And one would think that studying the Irish language and culture would be a perfect fit.
Well, and in the context of the history of the state, you know, you would believe so. I mean... You couldn't have the program we have with its emphasis on the Irish language and Irish Gaelic culture in any other state apart from Montana. This is what defined the Irish of Montana, and this is how they made their name, this is how they were renowned, and this is how they're remembered back in Ireland. I mean, the Irish government didn't contribute the money that they contributed to the Irish language and the promotion of the culture here because they had extra cash to spend and didn't know what to do with it. It was, as the president said, in recognition. She made a very interesting comment. She says, those who draw the water should not forget those who dug the wells.
Wow.
You know?
I like it.
And I think that's, you know, we got to remember that there is a whole history that this program is part of. It's not something that just emerged, you know, 20 years ago. You know, there is a history going back to the 1860s, but primarily to the 1880s, 1890s, when all those Irish speakers came out from West Cork and Kerry and all up along the west coast of Ireland and left their own unique and distinct mark on Irish culture here in Montana.
And with that, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Jeff is waiting on the line to visit with you. I want to give him plenty of time to ask his questions and make his point. All the other phone lines are open, by the way. If you have a question for Trey Locke or Rudorn, the University of Montana Irish Studies Department, soon... not to be an Irish Studies department, but we'll talk about that some more when we come back after this quick timeout.
Hey, Boo, it's Denise.
We are back on Talkback. We are back on Talkback. 712-721-1290 is our number. Our guest here in the studio, Trey Locke O'Riordan. He is the head of the University of Montana Irish Studies Department, at least for now. And let's get Jeff on the line. Jeff, good morning, sir. You are on Talkback. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, Trey Locke. I hope you're enjoying this wonderful, mild Irish morning.
It's awesome, Jeff. You know, I just hope the wind dies down for the parade and all the activities on Saturday. How are you doing?
Yeah, better than I deserve, thank you.
I think there's two of us in that boat.
We shouldn't be getting any... as you were talking about your situation, it struck me that you have popular classes, but no... but not folks not signing up for the minor. And in my own case, I crammed my 4-year degree into 15 years. I had at one point,
the scenic roof.
111 hours and no academic special. I took a look at that and said, this is ridiculous and fixed that. But, what my point here is that I think leadership, university leadership, plays a part in making sure that people know about minors and that are taking advantage. Because, I mean, if the classes are well attended, the minor shouldn't matter. But if the minor matters to the leadership, they should be the ones putting emphasis on that. And I know you're in a difficult spot, but I just wonder how much of this is driven by the increase in administration at university level all around the country, where administrators come in and make decisions about classes and majors and minors and courses that that they shouldn't have any part of, because all they're doing is looking at some metric that is, I won't say irrelevant, but doesn't really fully address what's going on. And again, I know you're in a difficult spot, so...
Well, I suppose you have two things. I mean, it's like everything, you know, even with your own house, if you overspend, you know, you if there's more outgoing than income, you're going to end up losing your house. So there has to be a certain amount of, you know, fiscal responsibility here. But then you also have to look at, okay, increasing or making your university and your courses, you know, unique, special, give people a reason for coming to the University of Montana, whatever university that you're in. Like as I said earlier, I don't believe that the administration, you know, has any kind of malice towards the Irish language and or anything like that. But I do think you do have a point when you have administrators that are making decisions that aren't familiar with the history of the state. And this was something that the Friends of Irish Studies brought up. They wrote a note to the administration about this and about the history, you see, because they believe that, okay, they didn't understand or know, you know, the history of the language, the history of the culture, and that were they to know that and factor that in, that the decision would be reversed. Now, it may very well be. You know, but the other thing is, sometimes select programs are what make the difference. And I'll tell you a little story that from my own experience. When I was a young fella back in Ireland, I got a job in a supermarket. Now, the supermarket was kind of a smaller one, you know, and it struggled because there were two other larger supermarkets around. And they could buy things in greater volume. They could offer things cheaper rate. And they would get into these price wars. We would try to compete. And, of course, we couldn't because we could never reduce our prices to match these other supermarkets. Anyway, we got this manager in who saw this and he says, we can't win this game by these rules. So what did he do? He told us when people come in looking for select items to ask them what it is they're looking for, get them to spell it in case we screw it up and give it to him. Tell them to come back in a week or if they have a phone number, we'll call them. So what he started to do is to identify these select items and bring them into the store. Well, word got around that you can get X, Y, and Z at this store. So these people came in. But not only did they come for that select item, they also started to buy four or five or six other things along the way. And in the end, what happened here is that the volume went way up to the point that that store became the third highest grossing supermarket per square foot in Ireland over a period of 5 years. So what happens here, you'll have students, because this is Irish culture and Irish studies, where we're talking about a population of about 40 million Irish Americans, that will look at Montana, say, okay, I want to do a major, and look, I can do Irish studies. I can't do it anywhere else. This is what I want to do. And they will choose Montana for that reason. You have to be different. That's the point that he made one time when talking about this. It's not trying to be like others that will make the difference. It's being different to them. You have something special, yes, something unique, and that's what makes you stand out. You're not going to be one of the herd.
And I wholeheartedly endorse that, and I think that's where leadership comes in. You know, you have a notional leadership at the university, but whenever I was in a leadership position and something didn't go well, my first thought was always, what was my contribution to this and how could I make that better? I didn't blame the people down below. I looked at myself first and said, did I play a part in this? And very often I did. And I think that's what's what I hear missing anyway from the university is they're saying, well, you're not doing well, so we have to cancel you. And it, rather than saying, well, how have we failed this program and what can we do to enhance it? I think that would make all the difference, just like that store manager you mentioned.
Yeah, I think it would as well. And I think you have. I mean, the reason that Irish Studies went to the University of Montana, I mean, initially was supposed to go to Carroll College. And the president at the time, President Trabant, called me in and he told me why he wanted Irish studies at Carrick College. He told me he was French himself. He loved everything French, which was great. And I'm sitting down there listening to him and asking, well, what am I doing inside here? Listening to him talking about the beauty of France and French culture, literature, cuisine, blah, blah, blah. But eventually he got to the point and he said, enrollment is going to drop. He said his enrollment services told him that the graduating population from high school in Montana was going to drop by 40% or something like that between 2004 and 2014. He said that's going to have a serious impact on Carroll College. What I need to do is recruit students. And he said, Carroll College is in Helena, but its roots are in the Irish Catholic communities of Bute and Anaconda. We're going to establish an Irish studies program consistent with their culture. And then what I'm going to do, we're going to recruit among the Irish American communities in the Catholic schools throughout the West to begin with, and basically promote Carroll College as a college that will give you a Catholic education and the opportunity to study your own culture and heritage. And you are going to open, so we put it, open the doors to Irish America, the Irish of America for me. Now, Lois Muir, who was the provost up at the University of Montana, was also aware of these figures and the drop. And she was also one who was thinking along the same lines. She got in ahead of President Trabant, and that's how we ended up in the University of Montana. Now, this actually caused an awful lot of upset among the Irish community, because a lot of those who were involved in the Gaelic Society and involved in developing the program were graduates of Carroll College. And they wanted in Carroll College because they believed an Irish studies program belonged in a Catholic college, same as there was one at Notre Dame and at Boston College. So, but anyway, that was the decision. Lois Muir got in ahead. That's why we're at the University of Montana.
Well, is there any possibility of moving to Carroll should the worst come to worst and the University of Montana be so short-sighted?
Well, a lot of them in the Irish community are talking about that. That's what we should be doing. That's where we should belong. Well, my own thing is that, like, there's so many people at the University of Montana have committed so much to this in terms of the faculty up there and others. We have a very strong support base. We have the identity that's located there. I mean, the Irish Studies program is known all throughout the Irish community, you know, and in Ireland, it's considered to be the most innovative and creative. I got a letter from a meeting that was held in Dublin among the Irish government ministers. As I mentioned, they contributed significantly to the Irish language program, and they were discussing cultural investment and promotion. And they talked about the Irish studies program, and they concluded with this. Now, they basically identified our program as being the most innovative and creative and exciting because it had its roots so deeply in the history and in the culture, and it had such a significant amount of support from the community. But they concluded the discussion by saying that, yes, we have Boston College and NYU taking care of Irish studies and culture on the East Coast, Notre Dame in the Midwest, and then we have the University of Montana taking care of the rest of America. That's how they put
it. I like it.
And
love
I
it.
Can actually, I have that letter still and I can show it. So that'll give you an idea of the regard in which this program is seen. So when this happened, it sent shockwaves through, and I couldn't believe it. Absolutely couldn't believe it, you know. And you see the relationship. Montana has a very special place in the Irish mind and imagination and hearts, because beginning with Thomas Francis Marr, it's the state that holds the bones of Thomas Francis Marr. So right from the 1860s, it ceased to be some part of the west of the frontier. It actually was seen as an extension of Ireland because it basically held, you know, the remains of an Irish patriot. And that's what made it so familiar. But like all down through, you go back to Ireland, and many people listen to this program of being to Ireland, and they'll be able to tell you, you mentioned Montana, they'll say Bute, you know. It has a very special place, and that's something that, you know, is shown in there. I have to get off the air here.
We're just going to take a quick commercial break. Yeah, we're a little bit past that. Thank you for the call, sir. We're going to come right back. George is waiting on the phone, and Nick's already on the phone with somebody else as well. Our special guest here in the studio is Treylach O'Riordan, the head of the University of Montana's, well, former head of the University of Montana's. Yeah. Are you still teaching?
We're still teaching.
Okay,
yeah.
This is the final
This
year,
is the last hurrah. Oh, okay. It ends on the 9th of May.
All right. Now we're going to come right back, right after this.
You've seen Knife.
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather, rain and snow along with high winds Thursday into Saturday for areas west of the Divide. And now a better chance we could see some accumulating snow in the higher valleys, a few inches possible. In areas like the Flint and Blackfoot valleys and even Missoula and the Bitterroot could see a couple of inches. The mountains will be crazy with 2 to as much as 4 feet over the Northern Divide and blizzard warnings posted. Expect persistent snow and rough travel conditions over those passes, especially along the Idaho border.
Okay, we are back on TalkBack, and our number is 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Our special guest in the studio is Trelach O'Riordan, head of the Irish Studies Program at the University of Montana, which is, I understand, going away, unfortunately. Right. But we're here to talk a little bit about it, and George is standing by. George, good morning, sir. You're on with Trelach. Go ahead.
Thank you, and thanks to the guests. I've heard him before on this show, and yeah, I'm fortunate about the program, but maybe it'll be short-lived, maybe it'll come back. And my message to the guest is keep up the good work.
Thank you, George. I appreciate it. But as I tell people, and you know, others, the Irish community here have said the same thing. They've been trying to get rid of the Irish for God knows how long, you know. And we just won't go away.
So anyway, I'm at a stage in my life where I finally went on that ancestry.com, and it's kind of interesting to see, you know, the different branches. And it's not really a line. It's kind of like a fan shape or something, because, you know, you've got two parents, but four grandparents. And then, well, let's see. You've got two parents.
Yeah.
Four grandparents and then eight. You know,
it rises really exponentially. Out. Yeah.
Exactly, and it's kind of fun. It costs a little bit of money, but
it's yeah,
the branch that has my name goes to Ireland, and
what's that?
Came over probably about 1845. And my first question to you is: there an organization in Ireland that I could contact to get a little bit of help on digging deeper into that you know of?
There are, I don't know off the top of my head, but I know there are organizations, they're professional genealogists back in Ireland, and they're working with people from all over the world trying to trace their heritage and their ancestry. So if you send me an email, yeah, I'll find out who you should go to. I mean, some are, as the case with everything, some are better than others.
And I can just find your email on the university website.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
If you can get to me before the 9th of May.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay, and the other thing I want to back up on the budget thing, and you know, unfortunately in Missoula, or actually unfortunately at the university, I think we're still paying for some misbehavior of some sports teams 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I don't remember when it was, but we had some misbehaving sports teams, and then we kind of recovered, and our enrollment kind of recovered, and then we had an author write a book about our town and about those misbehaving sports teams, or individuals on those sports teams, I should say. Yeah. And it made me so mad, because it hit our university hard, and it hit our community hard.
It did.
And
it was unjust.
Yes. So anyway, we're definitely back, I think, growing in the enrollment, and I have,
well, I hope so, but I'd like to see, you know, not just, because I mentioned earlier there about the size of the Irish-American community, investment more in enrollment, and particularly among the Irish-Americans, and let them know what we have available here, and bring in more out-of-state students. I mean, there was a time when Montana was seen as one of the five great bastions, this is how it was described, of Irish culture, you know, and Irish nationalism. Oh. And the others being Boston, New York, Chicago, and San Francisco. And every Irish nationalist leader worth his salt came to Montana. I mentioned Douglas Hyde, who came in 1906 for the language, but like he was followed by people like James Connolly, Michael Davitt, who came out before him in the 1880s. But you had people like Countess Markovich, and you had Mary McSweeney, Damon De Valera. There was a whole list of these very, very famous Irish leaders who came here to Montana. And that in itself basically attests to just how important Montana was, and the role it played in the creation and formation of modern Ireland. And it has, and I believe still has, the potential to become a great bastion of Irish culture, and that'll be centred around the University of Montana, or whatever university decides to take the unique culture of Montana and make it a part of study at a university. So, yeah, it's got huge potential, untapped.
Yeah, I've read that that book about Butte, what's it called, by Michael Punk, I think Fire and Brimstone. That's or correct. Something like that. And he mentions the Irish. There's a lot of communities, but there's definitely a big Irish community there.
Absolutely.
And I think about that every time I drive through on I-90 past Butte and I look over there.
Yeah.
And try to imagine 100 years ago or something.
But it's still, even to this very day, we had dignitaries from Ireland, and one of the things they'll do when they're out here, because it's all about your past and your history, they'll visit St. Patrick's Cemetery. And the one thing that strikes them more than probably anything else is the fact when you go in there, there are historical markers at different graves. But these markers are bilingual. They're both in English and in Irish. You won't find that, or unlikely to find that, anywhere else in the United States. There may be a few places up around Boston where you might have it, but it's outside of Ireland, you know. You do not find graveyards or cemeteries where you have historical markers in both languages, except Butte, Montana. So,
well, maybe someday I can get over there to Ireland. So thank you very much for coming to the
show. Thank you, George. Great talking to you. Have a great day,
George,
my friend.
Thank you for the call, sir. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Come right back. And we have Thomas waiting to visit with you as well. Only about 18 minutes left in our time together. So let's redeem the time.
We bump Congressman Zinke?
You go ahead. we're going to come right back after this.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Talk Back in the final segments here with Treilach O'Riordan, head of the University of Montana's Irish Studies Department. And we've got folks waiting on the line. Thomas has been waiting. Thomas, go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm a double graduate of the University of Montana. I've been watching the Irish Studies program. I always thought it was a pet project of one of the history professors. I can't remember his name, David somebody.
David Emmons.
Emmons, there we go, thank you. I never understood why the university went off on that tangent. I'm listening to the honorable professor here and almost laughing out loud as he's talking about Irish culture and the rest of it and how important it is, the Butte and so forth. And I know I'm offending him now as I'm talking about it, but as we talk about budgetary items that need to bring the university back into control, Irish studies has got to be the first thing to go, because as far as utilitarian concepts, I mean, come on. Justify what the usefulness is for it, please, Professor.
Well, thanks. First of all, with the thanks monetary the aspect, most of it is coming from outside, so it's not coming from the general fund. So you have people outside the university who actually consider their history and their culture to be important to them. Same as we do here. I mean, the question is, do we erase that or forget about it? You're talking about learning about a people, you know, who came out here with little or nothing, who contributed a huge amount to the development of the state and remained also faithful to their own country, helped to build it up. So you're learning about a heroic generation that gave back. And you're talking about culture. You know, what is the function or purpose of culture? It's to bring about unity. In the same way that, say, the family is a kind of the basic social unit, what unites families into communities is culture. And with your culture, it's not just what you're living right now, it has been passed down to you. And with that, a memory of what people have done and what people have sacrificed for their communities. So if you want the community that's willing to sacrifice for the better of others, you better learn about those who came before you. And this is what the Irish Studies program does. Helps you to appreciate that you're part of something far greater than yourself and you have a responsibility to it. Now, I mean, I hope that answers your question.
Well, I would imagine that there are people from all many different backgrounds and countries like European or Asian or whatever that would love to have something like that, something like the Irish Studies program to help their children understand their culture.
Well, they do. And I mean, the numbers aren't as great here. Probably 30% of the population of Montana claim Irish ancestry. But I mean, you do. You have them all over the country where you have different societies, groups and organizations that basically commemorate, celebrate and preserve Polish culture, Italian culture, you know, and German culture and so on and so forth, because it is important. You know, we didn't just drop in from outer space. We have a heritage, we have an ancestry, you know, and things have been passed down to us. We're not going to be here for too long. We've been given custody of something that we need to pass on, you know. And it's intergenerational, you know. We have a responsibility as well, not just to the community we live in, but to those who came before us.
You bet. So, should we take our break now? Let's take our break now. We'll get Catherine's call when we come back on the other side of the break. We only have about another 10 minutes with a Trelock or Reardon. Give us a call. 721-1290 is our number. The Irish Studies program is going away from the university, is as we know.
Well, it's the Irish language part, with the part that basically makes it uniquely and distinctly a Montana program.
Right.
I mean, they'll have Irish studies courses, and they'll be able to claim it's in Irish. They have Irish studies courses, and have an Irish studies program, but in effect, they'll have nothing different to what you could get in any other state.
All right.
And it'll be focused on the Anglo culture, not the Gaelic culture.
Okay. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout.
Most builders.
Okay, we're back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number. And Trelock, lots going on for St. Patrick's Day. So please fill us in if you would.
There is. So we have our St. Patrick's Day celebration this Saturday, March 14th. Our Grand Marshal is Mark Gibbons, our former Port Laureate, and a man who actually taught some classes there for youth homes. Because our Irish Man of the Year and Irish Woman of the Year, I'd start with the Irish Woman, is Shannon Hart, and the Irish Man is Gabe Gores, and they're both with youth homes, which is a project that's very close to the heart of most of the those involved with the Irish Studies program and with the Friends of Irish Studies. So we're greatly and absolutely delighted to be able to honour them and the work that they do. The day begins, of course, with the Mass for St. Patrick, which is in St. Francis Xavier Church. Now, the readings are in Irish, the Irish language, and this might be your last opportunity to hear it. So get down to Mass at 8 o'clock at St. Francis. The parade begins at noon at the 4X's. So if you haven't already registered, go down to the Chamber of Commerce and do. Then after that, if with the kids, you can take them to the carousels. The parents can go into Kevin Head and the Rhino Bar, and they can have some whiskey tasting, which begins from 2 to 5. But the big event, part of that Gaelic culture we're talking about, and one of the reasons, one of the things that came out of the Irish Studies programme, is the game of hurling. You know, there's a lot of spin-off things that have happened, like with dance schools and music and sports. So there's a hurling game that takes place up in the Washington Grizzly Stadium at 1:30, and I strongly suggest you go up and look at that. It's an awesome, awesome sport, the fastest field sport on grass. And then in the afternoon, the evening, at 6 o'clock, we have our banquet and auction at the Holiday Inn. And it will be a great celebration of Ireland. You'll have dancers there, you'll have pipers there, you'll have harpists there, all kinds of musicians. You'll have corned beef till it comes out your ears. And there's plenty of other nice drinks to imbibe while you're there, and great company. And that's at the Holiday Inn. It goes from 6 to 9:30. Tickets are available at the door or online at friendsofirishstudies.com. So please do come down. You'll be surprised the people you'll meet down there. And it's a great gathering and celebration of our culture and heritage here in Montana.
All right, let's get right back to the phone. Say good morning to Catherine. Catherine, you're on with Trelock. Go ahead.
Good morning. I was just taking a look at the curriculum at the university for the 25-26 year that's it's on the internet. So I noticed there is Irish dance, among other things. Is the Irish dance program also going away?
That would be going away as well.
That would be going away as well?
Correct.
I also noticed, and this is not really in your wheelhouse, but there's no Montana history major or program, or there's no Montana history course anymore. which I think is ridiculous. I mean, K. Ross Toole was one of my favorite professors, and his books, of course, are really good books. But to not study Montana history is ridiculous in a Montana, you know, university. So
anyway, that's the point that the friends are making about the Irish language is such a part of Montana's history and heritage that it doesn't make any sense to get rid of it. But I don't know, there has to maybe some kind of a cultural office or something or officer there that will look at, you know, certain programs that need to be there, because it is a university in Montana, funded by the people of Montana, for Montana. So it should have, you know, elements in it that define it as a Montana university that just couldn't uproot and move somewhere else and nobody noticed the difference.
Exactly. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Catherine. Steve is up next. Steve, got about 3 minutes. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you for the heads up, Peter. I'll be brief. Treylock, best of luck to you, sir.
Thanks, Steve.
Definitely. Yeah, you bet, man. Come from a long line of Irishmen, and so I deeply appreciate where you're coming from. I echo the feedback of the last caller. Hey, I will point the finger, however, and Peter probably won't like this. He'll probably hang up on me or something, but I'll keep it civil. But we'll have a, you know, your former leader, Bodnar, running as a quote-unquote independent, a.k.a. left-leaning Democrat. And, you know, the demonstration of his tenure in enrollment at the University of Montana should be a warning when you see programs like this eliminated, but also the declining enrollment under his leadership. At the, you know, if you compare that to the growth, explosive growth at Montana State University during the same time period, I think they have record enrollment there of over 17,000. Meanwhile, the University of Montana only has 11, down from its peak back in 2011 of I think about 15,000. So what that demonstrates to me is not the not necessarily the content offered to students, but the inability to bring to market an amazing product, which, you know, being an old guy that I am, I look at a place like the University of Montana and all I see is potential. I see a beautiful town, beautiful surroundings, surrounded
beautiful campus. Beautiful campus.
Yeah, it's a beautiful campus. Beautiful campus. Beautiful place. Very similar to like the University of Colorado at Boulder. Also a town run by left-leaning lunatics who are you know, just all hell-bent on destroying everything.
Steve, we're rapidly running out of time. Do you have a final comment for Treylock?
Yeah, real quick. Just to be clear, Treylock, you know, Seth Bodnar is a failure, and he has let this university decline. We should be very careful at allowing someone like this to hold any merit or weight in an election that might determine the outcome of our greater society. So I wish you luck, sir. You'll have it no matter what. You're Irish, and thank you for all that you've done.
Thank you, Steve. But I don't know if that's actually correct. I think what happened with the administration, and they've inherited a whole host of problems and very serious financial problems that don't go away and you can't ignore. You know, I think what said bothered it, he managed to stabilize things, which needed to be done. I also think because there isn't that budget there you need to put into recruitment, I think you're right, you could have done a better job. Well, the money wasn't there to do it. I mean, the Friends of Irish Studies themselves actually provided funding for us to visit schools to promote it back in 2017. But that was because of the reality of the situation, you know. So there was a whole host of problems that came down. And
we've got about 30 seconds. Tell us real quickly about the parade again, please.
So the parade, again, we're going to start with St. Patrick at the Mass at 8 o'clock. Then we have the parade at 12 noon. Bring the kids. There'll be plenty of candy there. Hopefully the weather will be good. The time is going to be up in the 40s. Then we're going to have the whiskey tasting from 2 to 5. We're going to have the carousels for the kids. They're free. But the other big event is the hurling game from 1:30 up at Washington Grizzly Stadium. And then the big gathering, 6 o'clock to 9:30, Holiday Inn. Tickets on the door or at friendsofirishstudies.com.
This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO. Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. It is hour number two of Talkback for this Thursday, March the 12th. Talkback this morning is brought to you by Harrington Surgical Supply, providing medical and surgical supplies to healthcare professionals all across western Montana. The number 721-8468. These are all 406 numbers, obviously. Gormer's Diesel Incorporated. Gormer's Diesel has diesel repair, parts, and service in Missoula. Call Gormer's at 728-7620. Pivots Plus, Montana's leader in irrigation parts, service, and sales. Call Pivots Plus at 683-4418. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. Call Busy Bees at 550-3219 and get a free estimate. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales, parts, and service. Call Bruckner's at 541-9097. Quality Seamless Gutters, expert gutter installation and repair. Call Quality Seamless Gutters of Montana at 728-4002 and get a free quote. And by Y West Storage, secure, flexible self-storage in Missoula. Reserve your unit today by calling Y West at 510-0590.
The views and opinions expressed on Talkback are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Hey, we are back, and I'm Peter Christian again, Mr. Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls and producing Talkback this morning. And we are privileged to have with us the Honorable Ryan Zinke, Congressman for the state of Montana, for the Western District of Montana. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. And you know, this is interesting watching you or listening you read through that. You're such a pro. You're such a pro. But you know, this is why, you know,
I learned how to read in third grade.
So. But this is why local radio is so important. You would never get that, you know, on a syndicated, you know, national news. But it's nice that, you know, the local folks that are the businesses and, you know, talking about local issues. So. And it's not my first rodeo here, but no. good to see you and Nick again.
All right. So, but what I understand is you're stepping away. You had mentioned that you were contemplating another term, but what made that decision?
Even battleships have to return to port for repair and reload. And you know, I looked at it hard, and you know, quite frankly, I've been through a couple surgeries the last years, and nothing life threatening. But years of, I would say, abuse in special forces have taken their toll. And so I just can't defer it another, you know, I can defer it until January, you know, and I'll finish the term and stay at my duty station. But I can't defer some of these things another 2 years and 9 months. So, but also, you know, the thought process, too, is you never leave your duty station unless properly relieved. So I found a great candidate, Aaron Flint. You can't appoint because we don't appoint, though we elect. But you know, I feel really confident that his background as a light colonel, two bronze stars, his family homesteaded in Whitefish. His wife, lovely wife, you know, is Montana and isn't involved. But they're a great couple, and they're on. You know, he's on radio,
right?
And if you're
right across the hall at KMPT, yeah.
But if you're on radio and you're doing talk show, you know what you're current on? You're current on the issues,
yeah.
Because you're talking to people every day from the full spectrum. And as a congressman, you know, you not only represent Republicans or Democrats or Libertarians, you represent your district, and it's important to understand the issues in the district from all perspectives. And I think that's what radio delivers. And he's good on his feet. And did I tell you he has a great wife? Because Jessica's great. So I'm really happy about that. And then, you know, looking forward, I'll get healthy and return to service, you know, somewhere. Steps forward. And here we go.
All right. So now we already have a caller waiting to visit with you. So should we do that now, Nick? Let's do that. All right. Skip has been waiting. Skip, good morning. You're on with Ryan Zinke. Go ahead, please.
Oh, and thank you, Peter. And,
good morning, Skip.
Good morning, sir, and long time no see.
Yeah, yeah. You know what, Skip, yesterday we're with Skip, and Sheep Creek came up because that's a really important issue up a Bitterroot. And I enjoyed the conversation, and I think we're in a good spot.
And thank you for that, and thank you for your explanation to everybody, because there was people from around the valley that are very concerned about that. And at the same time, you also, in the questions that you took, you talked on a bit of a tangent, and I love educational answers. And that's what you did. And you talked on a tangent about Article 1 and Section 9. And I thought that was interesting, and you explained some things that, especially when you were in appropriations, and what really happened. And I asked you if you would tell us some cliff notes about that article and section, and then even if you could, even about 8. If you could touch on some cliff notes and teach us what you encounter when it comes to that in the Congress and how it works.
I'd be glad to, Skip. And here's Article 1, Section
Thanks, Skip.
Of the Constitution states this, is that no money should be removed from the Treasury unless by consequence of appropriations by Congress by law. So what does that mean? You've heard that Congress has the power of the purse. Well, Congress has the power of the purse only if they use it by the Constitution. So I said on appropriations. So how much of our national budget do we actually appropriate? Well, by Constitution, we should appropriate it all, right? Because it's all coming out of Treasury. Well, we only appropriate less than 30% of the budget. And the 30% of the budget is the face, the front face of the government. That's Department of War, that's Interior, that's agriculture. But the part of the budget we don't look at, and we should by Constitution, is what's called the mandatory side. And those are the three ships: Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. And you have to appropriate. And look, if you don't look at it and make decisions, or if somehow, and I would say Congress over the period of time has invented these conveniences, mandatory, discretionary, non-discretionary, continuing resolutions, omnibuses, we've heard of them all. But in my opinion, what all those conveniences have done is it allowed Congress not to make tough decisions. Mm. And there's 30 trillion reasons why you need to appropriate and make the right decision, but make the tough decisions. Because if you don't, you go further and further and further into debt, as we're doing. So look, we all know that the systems need repair. So let's repair them. We all know that, look, if you worked all your life and you've paid into Social Security, that money should be there and it should be solvent. And in my opinion, if you're taking a government benefit on Medicaid and you're healthy, you're 18 to 62, you're not disabled, you don't have kids, you know what? You should be out there working at least 80 hours a month is what the One Big Beautiful Bill did. And the 8 hours is volunteer, so you could work at a food pantry.
Right.
But work provides purpose. It provides honor. It provides self-worth. So anyway, I appreciate it, Skip.
We're gonna take a quick break. Nancy and Sandy are both waiting to visit with you when we come back. Our guest here in the studio, Montana Congressman, Western District Congressman Ryan Zinke. We're going to come right back after this.
Cold and flu.
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather, rain and snow, along with high winds Thursday into Saturday for areas west of the Divide. And now a better chance we could see some accumulating snow in the higher valleys, a few inches possible in areas like the Flint and Blackfoot valleys, and even Missoula and the Bitterroot could see a couple of inches. The mountains will be crazy with 2 to as much as 4 feet over the northern Divide and blizzard warnings posted. Expect persistent snow and rough travel conditions over those passes, especially along the Idaho border.
Welcome back to Talk Back. We're privileged to have with us Congressman Ryan Zinke joining us here in the studio this morning. And folks have been lined up to visit with you, sir. And we're going to start with Nancy. Nancy, good morning. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Nancy.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Ryan. I just want to say that it was a shock, a surprise to us. And I had heard from a friend who corresponded with you that you had said it was because of injuries sustained during your military service to our country. And I just want to say, well, we're going to miss you. You did a great job between a rock and a hard place. I know there were many times when you were pushed up against the odds against you. And Aaron Flint, the great choice. I know I started a campaign for him. He's young. He's at that right age where he can build himself up in politics. He will. He's got the military background. He's a great speaker, communicator with people. And so I just want to wish you the best. And I know you're a fly fisherman. I suppose you're going to do a lot of that, aren't you?
You know what? I'm going to do a lot of things on deferred maintenance and deferred activities. But, you know, he's a lot like Tim Sheehy. You know, here's a guy that is young, exciting, talented, very smart. And, you know, he views Washington, D.C. as an adversary. Because the moment you view Washington, D.C. as, you know, this is the way the process should be, that's when they got you. So,
to be a smooth-fitting cog.
Yeah, so it's, you know, go to D.C., yeah. Shake things up, ask the right questions, you know, and but, you know, Sheehy is doing just a phenomenal job in a Senate that's a little long-tooth, a little old, but he's doing a great job, and I think Aaron Flint will be the same. It's really the next rung of leadership. You know, who's going to lead Montana and who's going to lead this nation in the next round? And it's nice to have, you know, a young, vibrant, smart, you know, and as a SEAL, I always kind of look at the last generation when the Vietnam guys, they say, you know, we'd always kill you before you got out of the boat because we were, our technology was better. Now, these guys can kill me before I get in the boat because the technology is so good. But it's also, you know, you look at the next rung of leadership, and I think we're all fortunate that there's leadership there.
Sounds good, Nora.
I agree.
Go ahead, Nancy.
I agree, and enjoy your time off. And I know you're going to be busy anyway because you're not the type to just sit around on a cushion, you know, in the backyard with a bottle of beer or lemonade or whatever. But enjoy it, Congressman. You earned it.
Well, I've retired three times in my life, and I would imagine this retirement will be just like the last.
Nancy, thanks for the call. All right, Sandy is standing by. Sandy, good morning. You're on with Congressman Zinke. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Congressman Zinke. I wanted to, echo everything that Nancy just said. Thank you so much for your service, and you picked a fantastic person to hopefully replace you. As I know,
well,
you definitely
need correction. Montana's going to pick. You know, I support and endorse, but you know what? I mean, we don't appoint. We
exactly.
Voted, and every vote should count. By the way, that's a big advocate of the SAVE Act. But you know, Montana will decide.
I know best because I've literally tied in one of my elections. But after serving city council for 6 years, I know that I needed a rest after that. So I hope that you get some rest and a healthy, this retirement. But the reason for my call is I'm going to D.C. for the first time in May, and I have emailed your office to hopefully see you if you're there or see your office because I spend my life on dream to go to D.C., and it would be so cool to see you in your working grounds. So check your office email if you see my request. I
will,
and we
and on Montana's when you visit D.C. Every Wednesday at 8:15, all four of us to get together. We have Montana coffee. We're the only state that does that, so we invite everyone. And all our offices are thrilled to give tours. But we'll make sure and flag. Send another email and just say Commander Zinke at the. You know, the subject line, and we'll flag it. We'll be glad to offer everything we can in D.C. and make sure your experience in D.C. Meets your expectations.
You're amazing. Thank you, and happy retirement.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's get another call in before we take a break. Kevin is standing by. Kevin, good morning. You're on with Congressman Zinke. Go ahead.
Good morning, Kevin.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Zinke. Congratulations on a successful career. Hey, I'd like to get your opinion or what you know of and if there's anything that can be done with. As you know, as a Congress person, Congress has borrowed $2.9 trillion in surplus revenue from the Social Security. And this happened over 50 years ago, 79. Fortunately, I've been participating in it, having it removed from my paycheck each pay period. And the promises when I first signed up in 74 was I can retire 62, which I've surpassed. And because this money was removed in 79, calculations saying that a lot more would have been in that fund accumulating. And I understand they say that they put the money into investment, into an interest-bearing treasury bonds. But the thing about it is, it's a loan. It's not still saying they borrowed from the piggy bank, but Congress wrote an IOU that we will pay these back. Well, it's been 50 years. When are the loans going to be, paid back? And I understand it's called the full faith of the government. But the way things are shaping up for us who have participated in the Social Security program, it just seems like we are getting the short end of the stick since the horses have been let out of the barn. Can you bring us up about that?
Yeah, you bring up some great points. So on the mandated side of spending, the three ships, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all of them are insolvent. When I say insolvent, there more money is going out than the program has, you know, coming in. And some of it is you know, not making the right decisions. And some of it is opening up the spigot where on disability, what's a disability is mental health a disability? What can be, but sometimes when you look at, for instance, Social Security on the disability and look at, well, I have anxiety if I go into, you know, a structured organization. And if someone tells me what to do, that brings up my anxiety and I feel, you know, that I don't have a fair chance. Well, if you go into an organization that is structured and someone tells you what to do, that's called a job. So we have to incentivize work. And the whole system of Social Security was more people at work, less people are taking out. There are fixes to Social Security, and all of them can be fixed. But these are were tough decisions, because again, if someone says, you have to make that decision, and it's a tough decision, a lot of times you won't. So all three programs can be fixed. They should be fixed. I think, you know, the easy ones are work requirements and that.
But on
money, I surmise, I'm not familiar with the 1979 Act. I surmise they looked at it and said, you know, rather than sitting in an account with no interest, we would like interest on it. But I'll look into it because I'm not familiar with exactly that transfer. But I do say this, the system, you know, the core of the system is we just got to return to, if you work for a living you should draw Social Security, and you should relax that Social Security is going to be there.
Okay, well, one of the programs that when I signed up in 74 was the fact is that right now it's, I think it's part of the DOGE plan, is that a lot of people who are collecting Social Security have never contributed or paid into the Social Security system, but a lot of people are illegal aliens that are on Social Security. How can that happen? What employers, is there a lot of fraud where employers are signing people up for Social Security? But that's the drawing out of the, you know, it's drawing off the system, the resource, I should call it.
Yeah.
But it's frustrating for us.
Yeah, and here's what's happening on DOGE, all right? I think the brilliance of DOGE is exposed it. So once you expose it, then you have to confirm it. And you're right. Just because someone is 300 years old and has a Social Security number doesn't exactly mean they're drawing a check. So you got to expose it, then confirm it, then you got to take action. And the action is taking a look at the roles, and if there's people on the roles that aren't there, they need to be removed. I 100% agree.
We're going to come right back, and we've got, Jeff and Harry both waiting to visit with Congressman Zinke. Seven other phone lines open, by the way, at 721-1290. Back after this.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. It's a rough morning for travel across Montana, and it was a rough night on the border passes in western Montana, especially. At one point, drivers and Montana Highway Patrol troopers were reporting heavy snow and at least one disabled truck, with traffic backing up for several miles on the Montana side of Lookout Pass. But this morning, conditions have calmed somewhat. Most passes have been having requirements for trucks to chain up, so be sure to check those travel restrictions. The National Weather Service says the winds should peak later this morning, but snow levels will continue to drop Friday into Saturday. We're still expecting several feet of snow, 2 to 4 feet at least, in the higher elevations, especially over the Northern Divide. But even the valleys will be seeing some accumulations as it gets colder. Watch for the heaviest snows to be around Great Falls and central Montana. Strongest winds continue to be in the Great Falls region, where sustained winds have been well over 40 miles per hour, gusting to 60 and above east of Great Falls. Gusts over 70 have been reported over Glacier National Park, with most other areas seeing gusts around 40 or above. That's already been leading to some power outages, especially over northwest Montana this morning. Flathead Electric Co-op reporting a few thousand customers without power on Flathead Lake, West Glacier, and the Libby area. Northwestern Energy dealing with outages for a few hundred customers around Great Falls and in parts of the Gallatin Valley. The governor's office reminding property owners there's less than 10 days left to file your claim for reduced property taxes. To claim the reduced rates for the 2026 tax year, property owners have to apply by March 20th. Electronic applications have to be submitted at homestead.mt.gov by midnight, and paper applications have to be postmarked on or before the same day. Last year, more than 250,000 Montana homeowners claimed and received a property tax rebate. In fact, if you claimed one of those in 2025, you may be automatically enrolled in the homestead rate for 2026, provided the homeowner did not move or change ownership this past year. This is the Montana State News Network.
Every act of change begins with a neighbor, with someone saying,
"We take care of each other here."
In food banks and food pantries, neighbors pack fresh food and dignity into every box, moving food from farms to families through Feeding America's nationwide network. So when that box reaches a home, it carries more than food. It carries a promise that together we can end hunger. Feeding America, led by neighbors. Take action to end hunger now at feedingamerica.org.
Enough already.
We can do more.
Enough already. We can find a cure.
Enough already.
We can do better for our kids.
Enough already. We are relying on you.
We can come together to support Children's Cancer Research Fund, a national nonprofit dedicated to ending childhood cancer that is on the front line of breakthroughs. Because
it's enough already.
Go to childrenscancer.org today.
Okay, we're back on Talk Back. Privileged to have with us Congressman Ryan Zinke here in the studio. And let's get right back to the phones. Folks have been waiting. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Commander. When I was a very, very young E6 in the Air Force, I went to the NCO Academy. And there, our flight leader was a guy who gave me the best definition of a leader I've ever heard. He was talking about the guy who was director of operations, a senior master sergeant in E8. And he said that I'd follow him into hell because I know he'd find us a way out. And for the rest of my career, that's the definition I used for a leader. And I think in the House of Representatives, I think Mike Johnson has largely fulfilled that role. Over on the sister side, though, on the Senate, I'm really, really disappointed in Senator John Thune. I don't see him leading. I see him following procedures and checking all the boxes. But the goal is to get the SAVE Act passed, and that doesn't seem to be his goal. It seems to be actually that he just wants to follow the process and then throw his hands up in the air and says, "Well, we tried." So as a fully initiated Master Chief in the Navy, honorary at NORAD, just before I retired. I'm asking you, what can be done on the Senate side? I realize that's outside your job jar, but what can be done over there to get the SAVE Act passed so that it's an 80-20, 90-10 issue. What we want to do is ensure voter integrity across the nation. So, thanks.
You know, I'll quote McConnell when he was the majority leader over in the Senate. He said, being the majority leader is like being the caretaker of a cemetery. You're in charge of everyone, but no one listens. and the Senate... let's talk about how important the SAVE Act. And I've heard these arguments with anti-woman, which is just ridiculous. What the SAVE Act does is it makes sure that you're a U.S. citizen to vote. And just having a real ID doesn't say you're a citizen. It just says you are, and you're a resident. But it's not a citizenship documentation. And California, gives them like hotcakes over there. So what it does is this. You have to have an ID to vote. You have to have an ID in Costco. So to show you're a citizen, that's a Social Security number, that's a birth certificate, that's a marriage certificate, that's a number of documents. And I've heard this, well, it's anti-woman. No, my wife would kick me around the block if I said, honey, you weren't capable of showing you're a citizen or having the documentation for a passport. But it's also people that are registering. If you're registered, you're on the rolls. But if you're going to register, and look, it comes down to this, is voter integrity. Our vote matters. Your vote matters. My vote matters. But you know what? My vote matters just as much as yours. I have a vote. But when you have across the states like Minnesota, you can go in and vouch for eight people. Are you kidding me?
That's no way.
You just vouch for eight people, yeah. And they can vouch for another eight people?
He's my buddy.
He's good. Yeah. He's good. Yeah. Just me a mark here. So when you go to vote, you know, it's a privilege. And you know what? You should make sure that your vote counts.
When somebody does that, that's demeaning the power of the vote.
Well, and then if you voter integrity, if you think your vote doesn't matter, you know, your voice doesn't matter, then I guess it doesn't. So we just want to make sure that you're eligible to vote. And it is a state issue on eligibility because some states are felon friendly, some states aren't. Look, you know, being a U.S. citizen, showing that you are who you are, and one ice cream per customer. You can only vote once. I think it's just good practice. It makes sense. And that's why, you know, overwhelmingly America supports it.
We're going to come right back. We have Harry and Dave both waiting to visit with Congressman Zinke. And we have about 28 minutes left. So there's still plenty of phone lines open. If you have a question for your Western District Congressman for the state of Montana, Congressman Ryan Zinke is sitting right here in our studio waiting to talk with you. And so we'd love to get you on the phone with him. We'll be back right after this.
We make sure you have one.
We are back on Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number. 1-800-568-5309. Peter Christian here with Mr. Nick Questions and taking your phone calls. Ryan Zinke, our Western District Congressman here in the studio, to take this call from Harry.
Good morning, Harry. Hey, and
good morning, Ryan.
Before your question, I just want to remind people out there that are heading the roads, you know, make sure you bring warmies in your car. Make sure you have a full tank of gas and make sure your cell phone is properly charged. And look, when you're going to go out, you know, I would recommend not traveling the roads because they're bad. But make sure you tell someone, you know, what road you're going to be on and an expected time of arrival. So things get a little dicey. But make sure you bring warmies in the car because you never know. People are sitting along the highway up a Lolo Pass for you know, minutes, if not hours, and stuff like that, delays. And if you don't have a full tank of gas, you know, things might not be as good as you would like them to be. So there you have it. So good morning.
Good morning. Yeah. First of all, I just want to thank you for coming on the radio shows like you do all the time. I really appreciate the ability to talk to you, and you know, it's something that most of all other politicians don't seem to have the guts to do. But I know you still got several months to work yet, so I'm not going to say goodbye yet. I'm sure you'll be back again. But a couple of points that you brought up, this Save America Act vote, it's a nice, it's pretty much a solution looking for a problem. I mean, as far as I can see, that it's a nice campaign issue, but that's about it. There's no real issue. They keep saying, you know, there's like 0.0004 whatever percent of people of non-citizens voting. So, I mean, it's a non-issue. And
that's what they said in Minnesota before they started looking at the abuse, too. There's no problem. Just don't look at it. But there's
how many people actually voted? That's the thing that Trump brings up to show that why he lost the 2020. It's an excuse thing. See, I lost because they cheated. So that's another thing. But another thing on this Medicare work requirement, that's
Medicaid requirement.
Or Medicaid, yeah. It's a nice issue that really is, I mean, it's penny wise, pound foolish, because these people, they're going to get medical treatment no matter what. If they're working, if they're not, whatever, if they're covered Medicare or not, or Medicaid or not, they're going to get medical treatment, and it's going to cost a whole lot more if they're not covered, because they're not going to be able to pay, and then it'll be on insurance and be on everybody else. So it sounds good, and it's a feel-good thing, but it's going to cost people a lot more in the end. And it's, you know, until you change the law that says those hospitals can just say, we're not going to, you know, if you can't afford to pay, then you're not going to get treated, and we can watch people die in the streets. You know, that, other than that, it's, you know, again, it's a feel-good thing.
Well, but it's a feel-good thing. Let me answer that. So the CBO score, do you think $80 billion is a lot of money?
Oh, yeah.
When the CBO says this will, and what it does is it incentivizes work. So, you know, and anything that incentivizes work, and work to me is purpose. It's honorable.
I have to disagree. I mean, a person isn't going to say, well, I'm 25 years old, and if I get hurt, I'm going to have to pay hospital, so I better get a job. No, they're going to say, I don't care. I'm not going to get hurt. They, you know, young people don't think about getting sick and getting hurt. It's, again, I'd say it's a feel-good thing, but it's not good.
I think $80 billion in a CBO score is a big deal, and we'll agree to disagree on that one. But
okay. And one more thing. I know we worry about the deficit. I should be, at least. That's, you know, the debt and deficit. Why aren't you reining in the spending that this president is doing? He's spending more and more money. We've got more and more trillion dollars in debt from him since he's been in 1 year, and yet you people don't do nothing about it. You just keep signing, let him do whatever he wants to, and just keep signing off on it. So, I mean, obviously you don't really care much about a debt or deficit, and that seems to be, I hear, the existential threat to this country. So apparently you don't care.
I appreciate it. So where are we spending our debt? So when we're spending $1 trillion plus on interest, so where is the hole? It's not discretionary spending. So and where I would disagree with the president is that nothing should come out of the Treasury unless it's through Congress, and that's constitutional. So as an example, when the president gave military members $1,776 for over Christmas, now I would agree with doing that. I disagree that the authority should have came through Congress, because Congress has the power of the purse. So on our debt, so where's the hole? It's mandatory spending. That's spending that Congress doesn't look at. I think the law has to be changed. So Congress should appropriate every penny that's coming out. And the government over time has grown where they have these accounts where they're self-funding, where they either by a fee, a license, a penalty. So it goes in there, and that money then goes into account separate, and then they distribute it themselves. This is like a self-licking ice cream cone. And there's 30 trillion reasons why we should follow the Constitution, and Congress should step up to the plate, and we should appropriate every dime. And appropriation, we can go on, you know, and layers, but one is it should be authorized. There's authorizing committees. That's like a menu. And then the next step is the budget. The budget guys come in and say, this is how much money you have to spend. And appropriations should look at the menu, what's authorized, look how much money in your pocket, and match. Now, that's the way the process was laid out. But again, over time, there's discretionary, mandatory spending, continuing resolutions that I think have diluted Congress's ability for power of the purse.
Okay, we're going to come right back. And we still have Dave waiting with a question or a comment. And all of our other phone lines are open, by the way. If you have a question for Congressman Ryan Zinke, he's sitting right here in our studio, waiting to take your calls, your questions for another about 20 minutes. So we'd love to hear from you. 721-1290. We'll be back right after this.
Visit Missoula's.
Welcome back to Talk Back. 721-1290 is the number. I'm Peter Christian, Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls. And Dave has been waiting through the break to talk with Ryan Zinke. So go ahead, Dave.
Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, good morning. First of all, about elections, I believe there was at least three recounts of Arizona and several recounts of Georgia, and the results didn't change. I'm still waiting for official. I mean, someone has to prove to me that with actual factual numbers that the elections are false, results are false. But as far as the budget goes, you know, we're spending 30 cents on a dollar in borrowed money. And you know, you talk about everything should be voted on. You know, we give, in a free market system, we give, what's the budget for the farm aid? It's huge. We subsidize the farmers who are business people. So, I mean, if you're going to go at it, that's not a free market system. And as far as Social Security goes, if an individual, a retiree who spent his whole life working here, with under a fake Social Security number, does not get that money back unless he can prove he's a citizen of the United States. So that's false. But I'd like to know how you would balance the budget. I mean, and it's like I say, 30 cents, 30% of our money is borrowed money.
Well, and we pay for it every day. The interest rates, for instance. The reason why interest rates are high is because we have to borrow the money. And if you look at the 10-year yield, that's probably a litmus test of how we're doing. But when the 10-year yield has high interest rates, then that's going to be passed on to your mortgage or your car or something. So, you know, the cost of money is a result of our spending habits. And how do you balance the budget? I think you go back to the Constitution, as that we should, Congress, and that's Article 1, and our founding fathers, remember, they were businessmen. And that's why that's how it's set up as a checks and balance to make sure that one branch doesn't have the run of the other two. But on the budget, we should go back to the Constitution and look. You know, we're not going to solve this problem overnight because the hole is pretty deep. But there's things we can do on Social Security to make sure the Social Security is sound. And to make sure we don't have to worry about insolvency in 5 years or 10 years. You know, you look at the numbers, but and go back and make Congress make your representatives anything coming out of Treasury. And again, Article 1, Section 9 is that no money should be removed from the Treasury unless by consequence of appropriations by Congress by law. It's pretty simple. So I think the simplicity and the brilliance of the Constitution is when we get in trouble, we don't follow it.
What would you do for Social Security? Be specific. Would you raise the retirement age? Would you eliminate wealthy people from getting
the first thing is eliminate the fraud, waste, and abuse. That should be all of us should be, you know, 100% behind that. So, and again, the Doge exposed a lot, but then you got to confirm it. And again, just because a person has a Social Security number that's 300 years old, older than our country, doesn't mean he gets a check. But when the checks are multiple checks to one location, and that location is overseas, that's a problem. And so that's clean the rolls to make sure we're providing the service of people who deserve it. That's step one. And then you look at based on how much money you saved on that, and then make sure that you close the aperture for people that don't deserve the benefit. And look, if you just don't want to work, and you're doing that by choice, I don't think you and I should pay for it. So there are, but it's a process of let's get rid of fraud, waste, and abuse first. Second is that let's see how much that repairs the hole. And then look at policies to make sure the core promise that was made on Social Security, you work your life, and Social Security is not not going to be hugely, vastly wealthy in retirement. It's just the core of it was to make sure you don't get, you maintain your house, your quality of life that you've earned over time. That's the promise that was made. And you focus on what would that promise was made and making sure you how to fulfill it.
Well, fraud in the Social Security system is bad, yes. But the fraud agents, a lot of fraud agents that were assigned to do that were fired by Doge. So, I mean, they've cut back on their fraud investigations because of Doge.
I would because of Doge. What does that mean?
Well, it
so
means
is Doge in charge of the
government?
What does that mean, Doge? I mean, did Elon Musk fire anybody? The answer is no. So you have a secretary that's in charge, and they look at it, and if things are identified as redundant or fraudulent, then yeah, they have an obligation to do that. If you have government employees that were on USAID. That were giving money overseas to interests that are contrary to the United States, our policies, you know, we're not going to fund that anymore. I'm not going to fund, as your congressman, sex change operation clinics in India, or drag queen, you know, theater in South America. I don't think that's what we signed up to fund. So
Dave,
I appreciate your phone call, Dave.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. All right. It's time to take a quick break, and when we come right back, we have another special guest here in the studio this morning. Ladies and gentlemen, a name I'm sure you know. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout.
Hey, it's Peter Chris.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number. And, of course, our guest this hour has been Congressman Ryan Zinke. And we have a special guest of Ryan's here in the studio who is very familiar with everybody at Town Square Media. That's our friend Aaron Flint from Montana Talks. And, Aaron, it's good to see you. How are
you? Peter, it's so great to see you and Nick here. Man, you guys are pros in this business, I tell you. I wish I was as good at the radio business as you guys are.
Well, let me tell you, there's a very good reason why you're here today, because I remember the announcement that came over just a couple of weeks ago that you were going to run for Congress. And so, hey, this guy is behind you all the way.
Well, I say he's only made one mistake, and that's the Army. Okay. Oh. But here we have the Army Navy team. So
well, hold on, I'm a Marine. Brat,
yeah, Semper Fi. So. Semper Fi.
That's right.
Anyway, yeah. So welcome. It's good to have you.
You know, it's so great to be here. This is the town where all three of our kids were born. Stayed at my mother and father-in-law's house last night, and which is always fun to see family. And so it's great to be here. But
did your mom make you force you to make the bed when you were done?
I try to do that myself anyway. I'm well trained at this point. Okay. Now I've been married to Jessica long enough. I'm better trained. We're perfectly trained, but we're better trained. But no, it's been a great, you know, it's crazy. Peter, you talk about the big news a little over a week ago. I knew that Congressman Zinke was going to be sitting down with President Trump and letting him know of his intentions. But you know, you never know which way that's going to go. So that Monday morning, I was like, okay, either I'm going to continue doing a statewide radio show or we're launching a race for Congress. And then, of course, you heard the news. And so we quickly, as soon as Congressman Zinke announced that he was retiring, we launched this race. And I knew we were going to have some big endorsements, like my friend, Senator Tim Sheehy. I knew him before anybody ever tried to convince him to run for political office.
When he was flying planes.
Yeah. When he was hiring our fellow veterans, having a beer with vets in Bozeman, and I'd ask them what they're doing for work now that they got out of the military. They said, well, I work for this company called Bridger Aerospace.
Right.
So that's how I knew Tim Sheehy, because he was hiring our fellow veterans when they got home. He was giving them a good place to work. So, and then Attorney General Austin Knutson, I mean, best attorney general in the country, a freedom fighter. I've known Austin for 25 years. So I knew we'd have some big endorsements. But then the moment we announced this campaign, it was like boom, 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 boom. Four of the five statewide office holders, the congressional delegation, absolutely incredible. And then 24 hours later, Peter, I'm standing in my jeans and do you guys like Nate Bargatze? So Nate Bargatze's comedy show, we had the whole family at the show here at the Adams Center back in January. So I had my Nate Bargatze t-shirt on and my Wrangler jeans, and I'm sitting there in my socks, and I look down at my phone and my phone starts blowing up. So incredible to receive the endorsement of the President of the United States, President Donald J. Trump. So it was just a crazy first 24 hours, even bigger than I expected it would be.
Tell me a little bit about your relationship with the president, because I know being a Montana talk show host, you know, I mean, that's a feather in your cap right there.
Well, you know, just like you guys, the best part of doing a show like this is you get a chance to talk to people every day. You get a chance to hear from people every day. They know what you believe a little bit. They build that relationship with you, and you know a little bit about what they believe. Some people, they want to run for office because they want what they think is some fancy title. I don't need some stupid title. I think our country's at a turning point, and right now, we're going to decide whether America on her 250th birthday remains a free republic for another 250 years. That's point one. Point two is this Western congressional seat here is incredibly important. If we cede this ground to these far left socialists, they're going to try to take the whole state down with them. And you know what they're going to do when they get back to Washington? The first thing they're going to do is try to impeach Donald Trump and try to, you know, jack up the price of everything like they did under Joe Biden and the Democrat reign already before. So we've got to bring that to a halt. And we've got to bring these costs under control. And that's exactly what we're going to do right here.
Well, we do have some folks waiting to talk with you on the phone. Skip is up next. Skip, you're on with Aaron Flint and Ryan Zinke. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Peter. And we'll keep this quick. It's wonderful that you could come on, Aaron. It was fine to see you yesterday. I wanted to ask the both of you so that we could all understand what happens. We're coming up on our 250th anniversary. and the country and the state and where you, where anybody lives. They want to feel like this can be as safe an event as possible all over our country. Do you think that, and what kind of protections do we have from all agencies? Do you think that that's all being handled so that we're going to be able to enjoy this 250th? Because in the at the 200th anniversary, we didn't have the kinds of conflicts or weaponry or devices or thinking that we have now at our 250th anniversary. Have they got the bases covered? And what do we have our antennas up for? And thank you so much for coming on, Aaron. Bye-bye.
We got 3 minutes.
Well, a couple things. The 200th was before 9/11, so the world has changed. Also, we have DHS shut down. And, you know, the ironic of the of these people that insist on DHS being shut down, if ICE is the problem, ICE is the only one of the only agencies that doesn't get hurt. So ICE is fully funded in reconciliation. But when you shut down DHS, you shut down cybersecurity, you shut down law enforcement, you shut down our border, on the backside support. And you TSA, you know, these people are working without a paycheck. But there's also backside support that helps support them. So when you shut down DHS, especially during conflict, you put this country at risk. That's why DHS was formed, by the way, as a result of 9/11.
Right.
So they took agencies, and it's not perfect, and there should be some reform on it, you know, on how the agencies work together or don't in some cases. But to think we're not in a situation where we aren't vulnerable. And there's hundreds of people that went through in the, during the Biden administration that were on the terrorist watch list. Those are the ones we knew. I think it's probably the ratio of 3 to 1 of people we don't know. So to believe they're not sleeper cells in the United States that have interests that are counter to our American experience, I think is ridiculous.
We've got 2 minutes. Go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is exactly why we also need to back the blue and back our local law enforcement and back first responders. I've been crisscrossing our district here in western Montana over the past few days. Eureka, I was in Libby earlier this week and was honored to earn the surprise endorsement of Lincoln County Sheriff Darren Short.
Right.
And Corporal Mineral County Commissioners yesterday in Superior, Ravalli County Commissioner Chilcott, so honored to have his endorsement yesterday. But look, what we've really got to do here, and let me also just say this too, because I am so excited that we have a primary in this Republican congressional primary race, because I am so excited to get out there and meet every single one of you, if I haven't met you already, and prove who the real Montana America First freedom fighter in this race truly is. And so I'm so excited to get out there and meet you if I haven't met you already. But I've called for these other candidates. Hey, let's have a debate, not just one debate. Let's have 3 debates. Let's turn every single Lincoln, Reagan, Trump dinner in every county in the Western Congressional District into a debate. And, you know, crickets, Peter. I've heard crickets from these guys. Some of these people will talk tough on Twitter, Facebook, X, and social media, but then you get face-to-face with them, if they even want to get face-to-face with you. So don't just sit there and pretend to be a tough guy behind social media. Get into a debate. And frankly, why haven't you been in the fight for the last 4 years anyway? Everything going on in this country, and you haven't been in the fight, but now all of a sudden you want some, what you think is some big fancy title, and so now all of a sudden you start to jump in again? Like, give me a break. We need people who are in the fight and ready to fight for the people of Western Montana right now. We got to make mining in America great again, starting in Libby. We've got to make our timber industry great again, and we've got to get trades education, and so much stuff to talk about. I'm excited, as you can tell.
You bet. We'll have you on again. Trust me. All right, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to a Friday's fabulous show, sir.
We'll be on from 9 to 10, and we will have City Talk.
All right, there you go. Go ahead.
Hey, just remember when you're out there, if you don't have to travel, don't. I ask, and if you do, just make sure you do the right things.
Be very careful. All right.